You are Locked On AFL, your daily AFL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On AFL. I'm your host, Kane Pittman.
Particularly with a pathetic effort from Pitt. I mean, it was the most disgraceful display I've ever seen from a big fella. That's pretty hard on an individual, but he's going to have to live with that.
Alongside me, just the hours from lockdown, Josh Lloyd.
Lloyd.
Kane, this is probably the only time in my life I'll ever say it, but I am envious that you live in Geelong and I'm here in Melbourne.
Well, for now, I'm not exactly acting like this is not something that is probably going to affect Geelong here in the next few days. We'll see what happens. I mean, the big thing is, I said this all along, the problem with this is that you're relying on a lot of people being very sensible and following these rules, and it's just impossible. That's probably why I'm a little bit pessimistic about the other states being able to completely eradicate this, because you only need a few idiots and you find yourself in a little bit of trouble, which is what Victoria is now. From tonight, the whole Melbourne metro area is going into lockdown. I'm sure that's not news to anyone, but it certainly affects the AFL season moving forward, because we know that they've told these Victorian teams that you're coming home in 32 days. And I think that it's okay for people to have the feeling that, well, just keep them there for longer. They can stay there for longer. It will be fine. It's not necessarily the way this is going to work, though, because I think we're really getting to the point now where maybe footy won't be played in Victoria again this season, because it's already, think about it, the season is really starting to roll on here. I think that they're going to face some real challenges over the next couple of weeks as Victoria goes through this. And hopefully, I mean, fingers crossed the other states don't, this doesn't happen to them. Let's just say that, because if it does, the entire season really is in trouble.
Yeah, if this starts happening in other states, then the season's pretty much cooked, unfortunately. And I agree. Look, this shutdown in Melbourne is occurring until August 13th, like minimum. And then who knows if we extend it further. Hopefully, we did a pretty good job getting it down to five or six new cases a day. But when we reopened things, then of course there was the security guard hotel issue that led to the blow up. And that's all it takes is one mistake for stuff to really start to go wrong. And if that does happen in other states who are introducing big crowds at events, and hopefully nothing goes wrong there, but there are going to be idiots, and hey, maybe there's going to be idiots from Victoria that try to sneak into these states and do it and then spread it that way. So we all have our fingers crossed, but yeah, I think the likelihood of footy returning to Victoria this year is slim. But what they're going to do after these five games up in the hubs, when that's going to coincide around about that August 13 time, a team's going to come back here, and then we're going to have like a 2-week bye in the middle of the season as they're trying to figure out what's going on. There's still a lot to work out, I guess, with how this fixture's going to work. But I'm only looking at things one week ahead at this point in the traditional footy cliche mode. It's just 1 week at a time.
Well, we know we have a few weeks ahead of us, which from that point of view, at least that is something to look forward to. We know the next 4 or 5 weeks are locked in. I think the bye is going to be the most likely situation. To do that, though, you're still going to be relying on, providing or depending on what the situation is in Victoria, you're still going to be relying on the other states to say, okay, go back to Victoria for a little bit, and then we're going to let you back in. Now, that, depending on what is happening back here, is going to be the challenge for the league. But they've said that guys are going to be able to be used through the season. We knew that the whole time. So they might be able to go back and say, okay, guys, look, this is going to be really rough. The situation is you're not playing in Victoria for the rest of the season, but we're going to give you 2 weeks, go home, spend it with your family, understand that this is a situation, then come back. Because it is tough to, I mean, I've heard people say, well, West Coast did this and they went overseas. They did, but they knew that it was going to be, regardless of the situation, they knew it wasn't going to be for the entire season. Right now, these teams have traveled interstate, and then once they've got interstate, they found out that, oh, shit, this might not be the 5 weeks that we were told. This might be 3 months or 4 months, and that's a completely different situation. I mean, we saw, for those who watched 360 last night, obviously, and I understand people say, well, you paid, but yes, you paid, but as he revealed, his wife is pregnant right now. I mean, there's a lot of situations where in anyone's normal job, where they go home to their family every night, they wouldn't be working. So for these guys to just pack their bags and go and play footy, it's clearly a difficult situation. Now, I'm certainly in the camp of feeling pretty sympathetic towards the players, while also understanding that the game is going and I'm trying to like make money. Like, we're talking to the players, sell stories. This is the big part of all this, that there's a lot of people that aren't rich footballers that are benefiting from these guys going over there and playing. So the whole footy industry keeping on rolling is good for a lot of people. And also, let's be honest, for those that are in lockdown in Melbourne, at least you're going to have footy to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it looks like they're going to be playing some Monday games as well. That sounds pretty damn good to me.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I also, you know, don't buy into that, well, they're paid this much money, therefore they need to do all these things. That, you know, if your job all of a sudden said, well, you work at Kmart, but you've got to go work at Kmart Perth for the next 4 months.
Yeah.
How would you feel? And you go, oh, well, I make $20 an hour. These guys make $600,000, whatever it is. And those things are all true. But we also have to remember that a footballer's career lasts 5 years average. Like, they might make decent money, and the top-end guys earn decent money, but then what do they do after that? So they've got to earn this money, invest it, and be smart with it, because they don't have this earning capacity outside of a few select guys who then will get your gifted media jobs, even though they're terrible at it. They don't have that ability to then have that job for 40 years, for 50 years. They have it for 5 years, maybe 10 years if they're really, really, really lucky. So these young guys who are making $100,000, $150,000, I'm not sure what the rookie minimum is, they might get that for 3 years. Then what the hell do they do? Then they go back to a minimum wage job, the same story. So they have to, yeah, they have to make this money. And I don't know, I'm preaching to, you know, a lot of the people are going to understand this and already agree with this, but I think it's important that we don't go, well, they make the money, they've got to make all these sacrifices for us. You go and do what we say because we pay you this money. It's not, they don't get this money for their entire life, and it is making that money at this time frame, and they've got to make those decisions. And some of, they've already made decisions to lose pay this season because of the situation. So it is a scenario where we do have to have sympathy for them. And I'm just not one of those people who are like, well, they make money, therefore I'm not sympathetic to them, because we're all still people, and we all still have genuine human needs and emotions and requirements. And there's things to weigh up in all these decisions. And we heard that with, you know, Jack Riewoldt yesterday, talking about the, as you said, the concerns of going up there, and, you know, has he made the right decision? And there's going to be plenty of players that go through that. And I think there's going to be some uneven performances, as we saw from West Coast up in the hub as well, with players having stuff on their mind. And with the talent level in the AFL in general, you know, players are all really, really good footy players. You put them in your local league and they just tear blokes up. Like, it's out of control. So much of it is mental and concentration and preparation and focus. And if that's off by 5%, then you're in trouble.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And Gary Ablett, a pretty recent example here, has come out and sort of revealed, I guess, the illness that his young fella has at the moment. And they've really only just discovered this is a difficult time for him to be leaving. He's certainly going for now. We'll see whether he stays with the team. But again, it's another situation where absolutely no one would begrudge Gary Ablett for saying, I can't play right now. There's a lot going on. I need to be there for my partner and my family. And this is really the point. I mean, it's none of our business, some of these things. And Gary Ablett's come out and said this, but it's not something that we really need to know as a public. And there's going to be a lot of players going through that, and they're probably feeling the pressure to go and play from their teammates to win for the fans and all that sort of stuff. But it's just a difficult time. It's unprecedented. We've never seen anything like this. And I think not only this first 4 or 5 weeks, all teams have done that, but there's no question the Victorian teams now are facing something pretty crazy because of the unfortunate circumstance in the state. But you mentioned people losing money. Oh. I know a few of my friends lost some money on a multi-bet that they had with Matt Rowe for the Rising Star. Looks like he's going in for surgery, and it's going to be an extended stint on the sidelines for him. Potentially, he won't come back at all this season. I've said this a couple of times, but it's remarkable to me. It's crazy to me that this is the guy that we've spoke about probably more than any other player on the podcast so far for a first-year player. He's been unbelievable. Certainly a blow for the Suns in terms of what they're trying to do this season. But we said it yesterday, and I don't know how much further we need to go over that, but going the conservative route with him is the only way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they have to go that direction. Now, the question I pose to you, Kane, if you had David King's job and you could influence the Rising Star voting process. Shout out to Lewis Taylor. Would you still vote for Matt Rao as the Rising Star despite playing four games in 5 minutes?
Not a chance. There's no way. He can't. We love the NBA, Josh, and I know a lot of the listeners are NBA fans as well, but this is the old Malcolm Brogdon, Joel Embiid Rookie of the Year debate from a few seasons ago, except it's even more amplified. I mean, he played four games. I mean, he appeared, I guess, in the game for 3 seconds against Geelong on the weekend, and he's been fantastic, and if he had played half the season, who knows where he would have been in the Brownlow medal voting, and maybe he'll actually poll more Brownlow votes than any other Rising Star nominee. That wouldn't surprise me at all with the tear that he was on. Maybe he had three best on grounds already, but there's no way you can give it to him. There's no way. There's too much footy to be played. It would be a disservice to the yellow young guys, I feel.
I think it's more like the Zion Williamson, Ja Morant discussion from this year, because Zion only played the 19 games, but it was still significant. Because to be honest, I voted for Embiid. Not that I had a real vote, but I picked Embiid for that Rookie of the Year back in 2017 or whenever it was. I picked
that's
Embiid.
Fine. Yeah, that's fine, Josh. You were wrong, but everyone's allowed to have their own vote. But you were wrong. That's fine.
Oh, sorry, I'm talking to a Bucks guy here, but let's not go too far into the NBA. But who? Okay, so then Rao's out of contention. I tend to agree that four games probably isn't enough. Who do you think now moves into the favourite spot? Is it his teammate? Is it Noah Anderson? Is it Tom Green of the Giants? Is it Hayden Young of the Dockers? That's me being a homie. Is it Riley West, who was ridiculously good this weekend? Like, who moves into that Jai Caldwell? Like, who do you think is going to be the favourite next? That blows it wide open.
Yeah, it does. It's going to be really interesting. And a lot of the times with the Rising Star, that's not the case. There's always one guy that seems to be further ahead of others. So it's kind of exciting. I'm interested to see Noah Anderson now because unfortunately for him, he's been playing fantastic football, but it was hard to notice him playing next to Matt Rao. So maybe he's the guy now that everyone turns around and says, well, wait a second, actually this guy is unbelievable as well. He's playing at a really high level. So maybe it's Anderson. I'm not sure though. I really think now this has become an award where maybe a guy that wins a Rising Star nomination later on in the season is still a chance to win it based on consistency of play throughout the season. I think that's what it's going to become about now rather than the pure brilliance of one player. But I think, I mean, you agree, right? So do you think that Rao should not win this award?
Yeah, I do. I think four games is too small. It's under 25% of the season. I think if he played 8 or 9 games at this level, I'd say, you know what, and he's that far ahead of everyone, I'd say maybe. Yeah, 50% of the games, maybe. 25%, I can't do it.
Yep, that makes sense to me. What do you say we move on to the mailbag?
Mailbag it is. Let's look at the first question. It comes from Draftman. And he says, you talk about how hitouts aren't as telling as that. That's directed as me, as they're made out. How do you feel about disposals? He says, I haven't been watching long. I'm not sure where you're from, Draftman. If you are from America, welcome to the game. I haven't been watching long, but when someone says they had 30 touches, they had a great game, I feel like I want to know much more information about their performance. You know my thoughts on hitouts, Kane, as does Draftman here. So what do you think about the disposal stacks? It's something that gets thrown out all the time. 30 touches, good game. 15 touches, not good game. Like, that gets thrown around all the time. What do you think about it?
Well, I did a little bit of sleuthing with Draftman. He didn't have his location up on the Twitter profile, but from who he follows, I'm going to suggest he might be West. A lot of NBA. You have a big following of basketball fans, so there's probably a few other people listening from the US. So this is an interesting question. He's right. He or she is right in the way that 30 disposals is different. It's also different used to be. A, because the stats have got better, the analysis of the game has gotten better. Also, obviously, quarters play into a factor here, but when I'm looking at disposals, it's not the raw numbers, it's what you're doing with the footy. And I've got two guys here as a comparison that I looked up last night. So both these players are in the top 6 in the AFL for disposals per game. Sam Doherty's the first one. He's averaging 25 disposals per game. He's got at 75% kicking efficiency. So disposal efficiency is one thing, but we know that you do your real damage if you're a player that can use the ball by foot, particularly in today's AFL where the zone defenses are set up so well. The defensive structures are unbelievable and designed to make scoring near on impossible. So 75% by foot for Sam Doherty. He's number one in the league for meters gained at 536 meters gained per game. And he's also been a part of 4.4 score involvements per game. But remember, Sam Doherty's the guy that's creating that attack off the half-back line. He's a defender, so he has that less of a chance of having that direct link, that direct goal assist to scoring. But you can see from the meters gained and the kicking efficiency that he's doing damage when he has the ball. And even if those 25% of kicks that aren't efficient, that don't qualify as an efficient kick, you know that he's doing damage with the ball. Now, I want to compare that to Brad Crouch from Adelaide, 23.8 disposals per game. So very similar numbers. He's only going at 49% by foot. He's only averaging 288 meters gained per game and 2.6 score involvements. This is for a midfielder. So he's a different player. There's no doubt he's a different player. He's an inside guy. He's contested ball. His contested possessions are a lot higher than Doherty's are. But that's just a comparison of two guys where if I look at a game and I see Brad Crouch at 26 disposals, I'm just like, okay, yeah, well, he does that every week. What did he actually do with the footy in hand? Whereas if Sam Doherty got 26 disposals, I'm looking at him and I'm saying, yeah, he probably had a real influence, a dominant influence on the game because he does more when the ball is in his hands. And that's really what it comes down to in 2020.
Yeah, it's very much of that. Not all possessions and disposals are created equal, and it is trying to look at a bunch of different things, and watching the game is obviously helpful to see where they got those possessions, how effective they were, you know, who are they hitting up, are they dangerous? And just for people who don't know, because there are these numerous stats, and the AFL has these listed, there's goal assists, there's score involvements, and there's score launches, and they all want to think, what do all these mean? Goal assists is when you directly pass it to someone who kicks a goal, very similar to an NBA assist. So you're the guy that gives the ball on and the next player kicks a goal. A score involvement is when you're involved in a passage of play that leads to a score. So you might handball it to the bloke that gives it to the guy that then has a shot at goal. Or you might be the player that he gets in the middle, handballs it out to someone, who then kicks it to someone, who then kicks it to someone. As long as the chain is unbroken, if you're involved, you're involved in a score. Whereas score launches is when you get the ball and you start that chain through an intercept, through a hit out to advantage, through a clearance, or through a free kick. So when the ball basically changes hands or gets into your team's possession, you're the first person who gets it, and then that leads unbroken into a score. And these are all things to pay attention to. Now, do you ever look at the AFL rating points as something to judge how good a player is? Because if we look at the top 10 in rating points so far this season, you got Gawn at 1, Lachie Neal at 2, Fife at 3, Grundy, Goldstein, Dusty, Cripps, Dangerfield, Bontempelli, and McRae. Like, they're your top 10. So that, I guess, it makes sense. These are players who I don't think many people would have arguments are in the upper echelon of the AFL. Do you look at that as a number, which it takes into account many different factors, not just disposals?
Yeah, rating points, super coach points, whatever you want to look at, are actually a pretty good catch-all because they do take into account efficiency. They do take into account they give some extra points for some things like intercept marks and these types of stats and occurrences during the game that have really become important. So I love the fact that those rating points change each year as well based on the game and the trends of the game, what's important. And it's really, as I said, not a bad catch-all for determining impact there. Funnily enough, I wanted to mention this because last night when I was looking through this, because I oftentimes you do get caught up on disposal efficiency, and I wanted to look at kicking efficiency because we know that the best deliverers of the footy are the ones that are really standing out for you. There's a couple from Brisbane that I want to touch on tomorrow before we get to the Thursday night game because they've got some wonderful kicks in their team. Two guys that are really, really down on kicking efficiency. One's Hugh Greenwood. He's going at 39.6% this season. It's going to be interesting for the Suns because we've mentioned Matty Rowell's out. We've praised Hugh Greenwood for his ability in the clearances in the contested footy this season. Hasn't used the ball well. He's probably going to be asked to step up. Maybe that results in him having the ball in his hands a little bit more. So that's something that he's going to want to look at. And one for you, Lloydie, Bont, 43.6% from foot this season. Not great. Not great for the superstar. He's someone that always considered to have wonderful skills. That's far too low for someone of his caliber.
I think that, yeah, from someone who's watched literally every game of his career, I don't look at him and go, Bontempelli is great because of his supreme skill, right? It's not to do with how accurate he is by foot. It's about his IQ. It's about how smart he is and his decision making. To me, rather than like he's not the best kick in the Bulldogs team. Like, not really even close to it, to be honest. Like, he's not a great shot at goal. He does turn it over at times, but he often will be able to get the ball into weird circumstances and you know, find the right option and find it fast, and also have that time to make that decision. Whereas, you know, often he's, I think if you look at, and I don't have that number in front of me, but look at how long his kicks are, he's a guy that is often doing very, very long kicks, and that can have an impact there too. He's not a, let's do a 10-meter sideways kick or a 20-meter chip kick. Like he gets on the end of it, and it's a 40, 45-meter kick nearly every time. He's very, very big into that, into creating space with his kicks. But yeah, I don't ever look at him as like he is an elite user of the ball at that high end level. To me, it's more about the decision making and the positioning and the ability to win the ball versus just pure kicking skill.
Well, I mean, you know this, Josh. The kicking is if you turn the ball over. Is that right? Is that a sledge? Can I leave it at that sledge? Let's move on to the next question. It comes from a friend of the podcast. He's writing in questions every week. We appreciate it. I was a little and getting the mailbag tweet out this week, but we do it every single Wednesday. So if we get a couple, we run through them. Dazza Wilson asks, for once, not a Carlton question. Do Melbourne wish they could take Jesse Hogan back for McDonald? And that's not really the trade that happened. But anyway, he says, it's hard to believe this roster was one of the best constructed 2 years ago for future success. Where has it gone wrong? You want to get us started here, Josh?
Well, the Hogan one is interesting. Obviously, he had those... We talked about him last week. I think he had those successful seasons in Melbourne, but there was obviously lots of things to do with that. It wasn't just a matter of Melbourne going, we don't want you here anymore. We're getting rid of you. So it wasn't that like, oh, Melbourne, what a mistake they made. It was Hogan. We know he had times with his dad and when he had to go back to Perth and injury concerns, so many things. And he wanted to get back to Perth, and that's what happened. So it wasn't necessarily a choice. So if I look, I'm just looking up the trade here. It was Fremantle got Hogan and pick 65, and they sent pick 6 and pick 23 to Melbourne. And they also, Fremantle also got Rory Lobb in that deal, and then there was a pick exchange involved with the Giants and Dockers in that deal. So Melbourne basically got pick 6 in that deal, and that was, what year was that trade? 2018, I believe. Yeah, that was 2018, so for last season. When we talk about did they get pick 6 back for Hogan, it is a pretty good return. Now, how they use that pick 6, that's a different story, and maybe we can have criticisms there of Melbourne, but I don't think that, again, looking at it as just Hogan for McDonald is necessarily fair on McDonald or on Melbourne, because it wasn't a choice, and getting pick 6 back, I think, it is a pretty strong return. Now, the players, they're pretty. Look, the list is pretty strong, but like we talked about, it's their effort, their kicking skills are really poor, and that is on the recruitment team and on the drafting team, and to be honest, on the players and the coaching development, because a lot of these guys, Clayton Oliver, like, where's the growth in their game? Like, Clayton Oliver came in as a first year player and was really, really good, and he's the same. Like, what's changed with his game? And he's, you know, horrible turnovers from this team consistently. So you feel like it's a all encompassing problem. Not that everyone needs to go, or maybe that just the pieces, the coaches and the players, they don't fit together. Their skills aren't aligning in the right area, and it could be a case that if a player went to a different team, his skills would improve. Or if a different coach came in, their skills would improve. Or if that coach went to a different team, his strengths would be better utilized. It just feels like everything is a poor fit at the moment, and some of the decisions they made have exacerbated that problem.
Yeah, so that pick 6 for Jesse Hogan, the interesting thing about that was, because I would agree with you, pick 6 for Jesse Hogan's a pretty good return, despite the fact that he was coming off a really, really good season in 2018. But Hogan, if they would have kept him, first of all, that's the point to make that I know you pointed out as well. But that pick 6, they basically flipped straight away and brought in Stephen May. Now, he's only played 12 games since that move to Melbourne, and that hasn't really worked out. Now, they picked up Cade Colajasny as well. It's fair to say he hasn't had a huge impact. Other players that brought in, Adam Tomlinson was a free agent this year. Not a bad addition, for sure. Ed Langdon as well, they brought in. But the other guy that stands out to me, it's Jake Lever back in 2000. So this is at the start of the 2018 season. Now, we know there's been a number of reasons. He's had serious injuries. I didn't necessarily think this was a bad sign, and he was another one of those gun Adelaide players that's gone elsewhere. He had a fantastic season with the Crows and looked like a real future star. He hasn't been able to get back to that player in terms of the intercept mark, and he's only played 13 games since coming across to Melbourne. They gave up pick 10 for Jake Lever. Pick 10 ended up being Nick Blakey, who is a key position player for the Sydney Swans right now, playing really good footy. And my question is, when I look at this Melbourne team, they need a forward. They need a target. Blakey would probably look very good for Melbourne if that was, and this is sliding door. So many things can change, and maybe this is not the way it would have played out for sure. But that's just where they're sitting right now, because Hogan and McDonald in that 2018 season kicked 100 goals between them. I mean, they were two monsters when the Demons were really rolling. And Tom McDonald's an interesting one to look at. In that 2018 season, he had 59 marks inside 50 in 20 games. 59 marks inside 50 in 20 games. It's a huge number. He's played 41 games in the 2017, 2019, and 2020 so far. So the three seasons sandwiched around that. 2018, he's only had 48 marks inside 50 in 41 games. So double the games, 11 fewer marks inside 50. He just hasn't been the target. Now, whether that's his fault and his level as play has dropped or it's the midfield, I think it's probably a combination of both. But we spoke about, you mentioned the skills. They don't have a target up forward right now. They've got no one to kick to. And I think they went the right way about it. You've mentioned this guy a couple of times, Luke Jackson, in last year's draft. Maybe they realized, hey, listen, we are not where we thought we were. And now they're going back to the draft because, that's a pretty valuable pick. And we've seen them trade high picks over the last couple of years when they probably thought they were closer than they were. And I don't blame them for that because they're in a prelim final. They had a great run through September in 2018, but they seem a long way off where maybe everyone thought they were at that point.
You talk about Blakey for pick 10. That pick 6 that they got for Hogan also was Ben King, who we talked about earlier this week as well, in terms of being a big forward up in Gold Coast. So, yeah, there's decisions there. But you're right. They thought they were closer than they were, and that led to some decisions. And, yeah, they haven't worked out. You're getting May and Lever, high-priced defenders. You're seeing criticism. Why would you be paying two defenders this amount of money? But then also, if they had a problem with their defense, media pundits would be out there saying they've got to go out and get a big defender. They've got to shore up their defense. It's what's holding them back. You hear it all the time. Where's your big forward? Where's your big back, man? If you don't have it, then you get criticized. And if you do have it, well, why are you paying these defenders too much? And I understand there's a balance in there. And having King and Blakey on a team that's struggling at the moment would look a lot better than having May and Lever. But at the time, they weren't assumed to be struggling. They were looking pretty good, and it just hasn't worked out for them, unfortunately. Maybe McDonald just does need that someone else out there, and he can't be that number one player. He needs the attention taken off him to be as impactful, and that's true of many, many players. So yeah, I do think there are mistakes that have been made, no doubt, but I don't think it's as like, well, it was obvious. It was obvious this was going to happen because I didn't hear these concerns when May and Lever were coming in. Like, what are they doing getting these defenders? I didn't hear those sort of concerns as a problem. So I think it's a little bit of hindsight there, but there's definitely issues with it. Now, one last thing before we go, because we are running short on time here. Hayden Crozier suspended for a dangerous tackle, Kane. I obviously have thoughts on this. I'm not sure how tinted my glasses are. He challenged it at the tribunal, and the challenge was dismissed, and he will be suspended for 1 week. We've talked about the Sean Burgoyne tackle. Do you think that this 1 week suspension is right?
Well, no, based on what we saw with Burgoyne, but we know that, and this is the problem with the tribunal. We see it all the time. It changes on the fly. They made the call after that Burgoyne one and basically said, that probably should have been a suspension, but he still didn't get it. And they changed the rules a little bit. We know it's based on the injuries that is occurred, which we know is wrong. It's wrong. It's completely wrong. And I know you said we're running short on time, but I wanted to bring one up quickly here. This was so long ago that maybe not many people remember this, but Mark Murphy on Thursday night, again in the St Kilda game, gave away a late 50-metre penalty. A very late 50-metre penalty, yes. Just swinging a fist. And it was very soft. And Brian Taylor was laughing and saying, what's that? It's a little mozzie bite. It's not a thing. Well, he clenched a fist, and he did literally...
He punched him in the chest.
He crunched it. That's the same action that Zach Merritt got suspended for 1 week, and no one brought this up. This, again, is the tribunal, why it's wrong, because that wasn't a suspension. Why? Because it probably wasn't a suspendable act. I agree with that. But then why was Zach Merritt the week before? Again, I was just watching that, and I said, how can you now say that this shouldn't have been 50-metre penalty? It's the same act. It's a closed fist. He swung it at him. No, there was no injury, but there's not going to be injury 99% of the time. So Zach Merritt was pretty stiff.
I know that you didn't watch a huge amount of the Bulldogs-Kangaroos game, but the Bulldogs lost a couple of blokes to concussion, Vandermeer and Bailey Smith. And yeah, I was, as I do, getting on and arguing with people on Twitter who were talking about, you know, Crozier has to get suspended because, you know, you've got to protect the head, right? And yeah, you know, arms were free. It wasn't a complete slinging motion. Both guys were on their way down to the ground anyway. But then my question was, you know, Sean Attlee tackled Bailey Smith, hit him in the head, clearly, and got concussed. But that's considered a safe tackle, even though we're going to spout, you've got to protect the head. It's a tackler's duty to protect the head. Smith was absolutely out of it, out for the game. Don't know if he's going to play this week. So what's the difference? Because he didn't put his head into the ground. Instead, he hit him in the head with his arm. What's the difference there? And I don't think that Attlee should have been suspended at all. It was a hard tackle. He hit him hard. But he also hit him, and a man, Bailey Smith, standing straight up, directly vertical, got smashed straight in the face, and was concussed and out for the game. What's the difference? Because he didn't tackle him to the ground? It's still a dangerous tackle because he hurt him. So what's the difference?
I don't know. Long story short, I think holistically I'm fine with that one game suspension because I think that that's the tackle that they want to get out of the game. But also, I mean, I know that next week there's going to be multiple tackles that are similar where the player doesn't get hurt and nothing happens.
Yep.
That's the problem. We're probably going to be talking about it right through to the season.
I reckon that'll do us for today. Kane, thank you again for jumping on. Talking about the footy, we have got a game coming up tomorrow night. We're obviously excited for that. It is Geelong and Brisbane in Sydney.
A good one.
Of course it is in Sydney. But yeah, it is an absolute ripper. So looking forward to watching that. And you'll be joining me to preview that tomorrow. And then the rest of the week we'll be here talking footy.
Thursday night footy, I love it. I cannot wait. I think I said this last week for Brisbane Port. That was the game of the year. Maybe now this one is game of the year. I don't know. There might be a new game of the year every single week.
I hope you can keep that bit going. And every week we do have a game of the year. But this one is it is going to be a ripper. Guys, don't forget to subscribe. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. And today I'm going to leave you with a shout out to Geelong legend, Clint Bizzle.